What's up? I'm Amanda Costco, and you're listening to the Electric Runway Podcast, a podcast exploring the intersection of fashion and technology. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today is a very special episode of the show for two reasons. One, this is the last installment before we break for the holiday season. And two, because we've brought in a very special guest to do a roundup podcast looking back at 2016. Mucinetta Capfunde is the editor of Fashionerd, an online magazine and destination for all things fashion tech. If you don't already have it bookmarked on your internet browser, I suggest you do it right now. Now, the funny thing is that Mucinetta and I have been following one another for a while, but we didn't meet in person until this summer at Fashion Tech Berlin, where we both spoke. I'm so happy to have had the opportunity to meet her in person, and I'm so happy to have her with me here today to take a look back at all that was in 2016 in terms of fashion tech. And for those of you who've been following this industry, you know it was a big year. So this is a longer episode than normal because we're packing a whole lot in. So without further ado, my conversation with fellow fashion tech journalist, thinker, speaker, and all-around lady boss, Mucinetta Capfunde, the founding editor of Fashionerd. Mucinetta, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's so great to speak with you.
Thank you. Good to see you too. How are you, Amanda?
Yeah, no, excellent. Since we saw each other last this summer, and I'm really looking forward to doing this recap because 2016 was such a big year for fashion tech. But I want to talk about you and about Fashionerd a little bit in case people, you know, aren't aware. So for those who don't know, who are you and what is Fashionerd?
Well, Fashionerd.com, it basically is a digital magazine that we launched in January 2015. And the objective was all about translating technology in a fashion voice. We found that there was a gap in the market for, let's say, an online blog that would be able to tell consumers about technology and explain it in a way that they can understand much more easier.
Absolutely. Yeah. And where are you based? Because I know you have an Amsterdam phone number, you have a London phone number. Where do you spend most of your time?
Half and half, actually. We're kind of based in London, like Fashionerd is based in London, but we're traveling a lot back and forth between Amsterdam, because we have a base here as well, and London. So we kind of straddle both cities.
Fantastic. And so at Electric Runway, we look at the different ways fashion and technology intersect, and this sometimes includes retail tech, so the future of shopping, the customer of tomorrow. How do you define fashion tech and think about it for your audience?
Well, we kind of are aware that there's a lot of definitions floating around when it comes to fashion tech. And I think this is because it's still in its infancy, so it's still trying to find its voice. But how we understand it to be is that it's a term that you would use to describe a garment that's embedded with technology, such as polyvending and solar panel jumper is a good example, or technology that you use to create fashion, such as a 3D printer.
Absolutely. And so before we, you know, dig a little deeper into a recap of 2016, which was, as I mentioned, such an exciting year for fashion tech, I'd love for audiences to learn a little bit more about you. How did you get into fashion tech? And when did you mentioned when you started. So how did you get into all of this?
Well, I'm from a fashion background. I've been in the fashion industry for over 10 years, and I was working in fashion PR. And what I kind of realized was that I loved fashion, but I had also a passion for technology. And there was a gap in the market missing for something that could merge the two. And I thought, why not start Fashionerd? And it became one of the fastest growing digital magazines out there, which was very exciting for the both of us.
Yeah.
So now fashion has become kind of like my life, I guess you could say. And it's something that I kind of enjoy and also work really hard to make sure that I give our audience what they expect from us, which is to be educated about the merge.
Yeah. And why do you think it was one of the fastest growing online magazines? I mean, you have a very strong editorial bend and editorial voice. Do you think that it's that, or do you think that it's the space that you're in, or a combination of both?
I think it's a little combination of both. And also because we're all about not so much talking to our audience, we're all about starting a conversation. We want to be able to say, this is what we're going to talk about. Let us know what you think. Whether it be a positive, negative, or whatever response it is, we're all about starting that conversation, building a community that wants to talk about fashion tech, learn more.
Yes,
and I think a lot of the sites that are out there cater to a lot of the early adopters. Well, we like to cater to both. Early adopters come to us because they want to learn, you know, what's going on, what's hot at the moment, and the curious people want to know what fashion tech is about and be educated.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I certainly come to Fashioner to find out what's up, and I appreciate all the hard work that you do. So 2016 was such an important year for fashion tech. Any moments that stood out in your mind?
For me, it has to be the collaborations. This was definitely the year of collaborations. You know, you had Chromax with Intel, Bionicon with G-Star Raw, Adidas with Parley. It was when fashion and technology were finally coming together. You had luxury brands collaborating with tech giants, and it felt like they were conversating. They were coming up with ideas that could attract consumers, which is one of the hardest things with fashion and technology. A lot of consumers don't understand what it's about and they're misinformed. So when they see their favorite brand showing you what fashion tech is about, wearable tech is about, I think it's a great thing for the industry. You know, it makes us get out there a bit more and for consumers to understand that it's more than just robotics.
Yeah, and it really legitimizes the space. Some really surprising collaborations as well. I mean, we saw Avery Dennison with Rochambeau, and I mean, Google and Levi's actually came out with the product that they've been talking about so long with Project Jacquard. So a lot of really interesting collaborations from parties that you didn't think would really sit together at the same table, but are now putting their minds together to come out with this kind of brave new world of the future of fashion. So it's a really exciting time to be covering this space.
It is very exciting, for sure, you know, and I think there's a lot, it's still just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more to come, I'm sure, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And so, Mutinetta, you and I both spent a lot of time traveling and covering the space and speaking at various events. What was the most interesting spot or event you visited this year and why?
If I can be greedy, I'm going to mention two.
Sure.
Fashion Tech Berlin was quite interesting, which we both spoke at. What I loved about it was the room that was full of all these different designers and their ideas. It was really great to be able to meet the person behind an idea, talk to them about it, give them questions, find out more. You know, it's definitely a much better way of communicating with people without the press release.
Yeah. You
hear from the horse's mouth.
There was great energy to it, wasn't there? Sorry to cut you off. I was just going to say there was great energy to that event, wasn't there?
There was great energy. And it was just amazing just to meet designers and also to meet influencers like yourself as well, to bounce ideas off and talk to and see, you know, what direction you're coming from, what direction people like Lisa Lang are coming from and Nina Annette and all these people. I thought, well, we're all in the industry. It's such a small world. So it was definitely a place that I enjoyed being, and I felt the buzz and I loved it, and I'll definitely go again. Another event that I went to was a fashion fusion event that happened here in London. And the reason why this was one of my favorites, because it involves consumers. It was all consumers that attended. So it's not so much industry insiders. It was all about introducing technology to consumers directly. And I loved it because I got to speak to consumers and tell them about this industry, and they got to ask me questions. And it felt like I was able to be the voice of fashion tech.
Fantastic.
To people who are yet not sure about the industry.
Yeah, it's like you were talking to your audience, basically. You're able to go face-to-face with the fashion-nerd girl, like whoever that is that reads, or man, right, that reads, you know, the online magazine. It's like they're right there in front of you, and you can see what they're curious about. So I can imagine that that would be really fulfilling as well. For me, I think, you know, CES was a big event. I've never been to CES before, and I went in January. I got to meet, like, Liz Beckler of Decoded Fashion, which was awesome, and Billy Whitehouse was there debuting Naughty, the smart yoga pants that made so much buzz. And throughout the year, I really noticed a few trends, and I want to talk about some of these with you. The biggest one that I noticed was the shift in the conversation from gadgets towards garments. It seems in 2015 and even in 2016, there was a lot of gadgets. But now I think that the conversation really has moved towards connected clothing and smart textiles. And I really see it as kind of like fashion taking over the conversation a little bit. What are your thoughts on this?
I think as technology becomes more refined, we are able to focus a lot more on fashion. Before, when it seemed a bit more gadgety and like it was something we can't work with, it was a different story. 2016 was all about refining that technology, making it smaller, making it more adaptable, making it easier for fashion to adopt it, which I think is a great achievement. And it's a big difference from 2015 to 2016. And I think you yourself can also see the difference from what we were reporting on and the products we were writing about back in 2015 versus the products that we're writing about now in 2016.
Yeah.
It's been a major improvement.
Yeah.
So the shift is a great way of showing the evolution that's taken place.
Yeah. If 2015 could be described one word when it comes to wearables or, you know, fashion tech, I might say clunky. And then 2016 moved in. I think the word that you used was refined. I like that.
Definitely refined. And we like it refined. We like to know that the technology that's in our garments is seamless and is not noticeable.
You know, absolutely.
And we've got brands like Emil and Eris who are creating beautiful cashmere coats with technology and that's seamlessly integrated.
Yeah.
And I've actually met the lady behind the brand and she has shown me the battery that they use. And I'll tell you something, Amanda, it's about time we got the tiny battery because the battery that I've seen related to fashion tech have been humongous, you know.
Yeah, wow. It's like carrying a little Game Boy in your pocket normally.
Pretty much, yeah. So it was quite nice to show me the battery they had at the beginning and the battery that they have now. And I was like, Rana, oh my God, it's like so small. She's like, yeah, that's what I want.
You know, yeah.
I just want a big, bulky, you know, battery in my cashmere coat. I mean, who wants that?
Yeah.
So that was really nice to see. And I was like, okay, this is good to know fashion is moving along with our needs and our wants, you know.
Yeah, and those beautiful heated coats that she's making. I mean, we recorded with her for the Electric Runway podcast about 2 weeks ago, and that episode will be coming out in the new year. But I mean, I can't wait to get my hands on one of these. Did you have a chance to feel the fabrics and see the cut in person?
Can I just say it was scrumptious? Like, literally, I didn't even get it because we were meeting in a cafe in Sloane Square. And just before I even sat down, she was like, Chinatta, you must try this coat before you sit down. So I removed my simple cost coat that I wear and I was like, okay, let's put on this £3,000 coat, put it on, and it was like butter. It was so soft.
I can
imagine.
It was
very light. And yeah. What was funny was she said to me, it's going to get lighter. And I was like, really? It's light enough. So what I loved about Rana is that she was all about refining her brand and her coat and making sure that it's what anyone wants to wear. You know, it's something that we're all going to salivate over.
Yeah.
So, and it was warm. It was beautifully warm.
And what I think is, what I think is really cool about her brand too is she's not trying to be everything to everybody. She has a very simple, straightforward functionality that people understand, especially people who live in places where it gets cold, understand. And she's come out with, you know, a handful of classic cuts for women and classic cuts for men. I think that the, you know, the use case is there. It's very, you know, personal and it's something I think people get. I think she's going to do very well, and I'm very excited for that company.
I think she will definitely do very well, and you can't go wrong with the classic cut coat. I mean, everyone, my mom's got a cut that coat from when she was growing up, and you know, it's kind of the kind of style that just never dies out down. You know, it's what you always have in your wardrobe. So she has definitely thought about her brand strategy in the correct manner, and it's a coat before it's technology. You know, it's fashion before tech, which I love.
Yeah. Absolutely. So another trend that I noticed was very big this year was personalization. Whether companies are working on an electronic shoe or a chatbot, personalization seems to be the holy grail for startups right now. Why do you think it's become so important for customers?
I think it's always been around. It's something that's understood but not yet quite achieved properly. But personalization is something that is important because it's about yourself. It's about how can I make this product be personal to me?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a lot of brands, such as your wearables and Fitbits and whatnot, they're all about personalizing that particular product to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everyone's the same. And that's what technology offers. It offers you the opportunity to personalize something, to pick what works for you,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, what features suit you and what are compatible to your lifestyle. So it's an important factor and it's what will sell a product.
Yeah, and it's a challenge too, though, because, you know, if we think of something like the Apple Watch, the form factor doesn't change. I mean, you have size options, but the form factor doesn't change. The personalization really comes in the color of the band. Now, I'm talking just form factor and aesthetics right now. Obviously, you can personalize the features and the software behind it to be catered to your lifestyle. But when it comes to just aesthetics, you know, it's challenging to have something that is beautiful and has options and, you know, still maybe conveys a sense of your brand, but, you know, gives the consumer enough choice. So it's challenging. Certainly.
It is. But do you know, it comes down to, Amanda, know your customer.
Yeah.
Know what you're not going to please everybody, but you can please your customer base because they are the ones that know your product, want your product already. So if you know your customer, know what they need, you can actually cater to that. It's impossible to cater to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think if brands try to do that, they will fail.
Yeah.
But if they say, we know our customer base, we know what they want, then you cater to their needs and you cater to their wants, and anyone else that you gain with those extra features that you have brought on board is a bonus.
Yeah, what's that saying? It goes, be everything to somebody rather than, you know, being, I'm messing the saying up, but.
Yeah, I think that sums it up quite nicely.
Yeah, absolutely. So what other trends did you notice in 2016?
I noticed how the fitness tracker trend kind of reached its peak.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly started to kind of, you know, go down slightly, which is great with fitness trackers as a trend because it introduced wearables to the consumer. You know, it kind of started that wearable conversation. What are they? What do they do? How would they improve my life?
Yeah.
So that to me was a good trend. And now we're having fitness trackers that are bracelets, beautiful bracelets. You're, you know, like what is it, Wisewear and all these kind of brands and Benaya and all track this, that and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's great. And if they stop working, the battery dies, you still got a beautiful bracelet on. You can't complain. So I think the fitness tracker trend was definitely one that kind of slowly introduced wearables to consumers, which made it amazing and made it easier for them to then adopt other wearables.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sorry, what are you going to say?
No, I was going to say, I think you're right. It was the first kind of major use case and it's kind of now like the benchmark. So now wearables are starting to do other things, but at the very baseline, they should, you know, track your activity. And, you know, there's kind of like a standard now. So with the case of like Wisewear that you mentioned, you know, it does all the activity tracking, but then there's these added features like the safety alert and things like that. And at minimum, it's a fitness tracker, right? So it's like everything else.
I think if you don't get those, does it measure my heartbeat? I think people will be like, it doesn't do much.
Yeah.
It's the basic, this is what you need to have. And then the extras are what make you then stand out from the rest.
Yeah, exactly.
And then another trend I noticed, and if you picked up on it as well, Amanda, is how luxury brands are collaborating with tech giants.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a big trend at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the collaboration piece is so necessary because what I'm noticing is I'm talking to fashion designers, traditional fashion designers, and they know that they want to get involved in this space, but they're so busy just keeping up with, you know, their own delivery schedule and with digital marketing and making sure that all their online assets are up to date, that thinking about doing a wearable or some sort of integrated technology is it's too much for them. They need that technical hand to help. And then on the other side, I find the technologists are just innovating technology for the sake of innovating, but have no use case for it or can't seem to wrap the technology in a story that makes sense. So, you know, I think you've talked about fashion and technology as the kind of ultimate power couple. And I would definitely have to agree because I think that, you know, technology innovates, but fashion can wrap something in a story.
They do. They know how to sell to the consumer. They know how to make it work. They've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
But I think they are working together a bit better nowadays. And I think the consumer is willing to listen. And that was the big challenge. How do I get consumers on board? Without it coming across gimmicky,
yeah.
Or like you're trying to sell them a gadget,
yeah.
Or you're trying to sell them something they don't need in their lives. And those are the hurdles that have been jumped. And I feel like we've now finally got the consumer's ear.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously the Met Gala was a super important moment this year. What are your thoughts on the theme as well as some of the outfits that came out of the Met Gala? Obviously with Claire Danes, Zac Posen dress being one of the big ones and the Marquesa IBM Watson dress. What were your thoughts when you were watching this unfold?
Well, to be quite honest, Amanda, when I first heard the theme, I was very excited. I was like, finally, at last, we're going to have celebrities, you know, getting it out there, you know, letting consumers know this is what's going on. And because they're the ones that all the consumers look, you know, look up to, like who's wearing what, who, you know, how can I get involved with this? And then it happened and I was, you know, it was like a climax that just went.
So describe the letdown.
Opportunity. I had this amazing platform to collaborate with designers like Anouk Wiprecht and Pauline van Dungen and Iris Herb. I think Iris Herb had like Herb and Herb and stuff showcased, but no one was really wearing her stuff on the runway, not that I saw anyway, and on the red carpet. So I feel like they missed the opportunity to kind of use celebrity as their muse to showcase how far fashion tech has come. what it, where it was a year ago, let's say.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was both excited about some of the kind of marquee pieces that were on the runway, but it was really interesting to see how different celebrities like, you know, Taylor Swift and Lady Gaga interpreted the theme. And I did expect to see more Alive costumes and, you know, some of the designers that you mentioned, I expected to see them involved, but they weren't. I think it maybe speaks to that gap. The industry of celebrity is very closely tied to the industry of fashion. So it makes sense that we would have like Marquesa and Zac Posen in there, but
they communicated the wrong thing about fashion tech. Yeah. Everyone's going to think it's Judy Jetson and Silver. That's what I had a problem with. I felt like for the mainstream, fashion tech is an area that they still don't understand what it is. Is it a buzzword? You know, is it going to still be around a year from now? Is it something that we should take seriously? You know, and the Met Gala was an opportunity to rectify this, to be like, hey guys, you know, technology has always been around in fashion, but now it's making such a big difference that will impact your lifestyle in a positive manner. And I felt a bit like they didn't really touch on that. And yeah, the celebrities looked great and, you know, wearing their silver and whatnot and robotics that they had on and the Tamagotchis that Kate, what's her name, Kate Perry, okay, was all great and great fun and whatnot. But I was a bit disappointed that they didn't really use the celebrities as a muse. You know, I wanted to see like Balenciaga collaborating with Anouk Wiprecht or kind of, I don't know, engineers showing fashion brands what they can do. And it was such a great opportunity to progress. And unfortunately, the most exciting thing we had was a lit up dress. And we've already seen that already, Amanda. We've seen that many a times. What else is new? What else? We're doing so much more than that.
Yeah.
It would have been great if they had something that is so normal that people would be like, would not even know it had technology in it until it did something, you know? And they'd be like, ooh. And we only had a few. Like you said, Claire Danes, we had Carolina Konkova, we had Emma Watson. Mm-hmm. These are all wearing tech. Great. But it would have been lovely to see 80% of them at least wearing some sort of fashion tech, because there is a lot out there, so it's not as if there isn't much.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It was a little bit of a letdown, but it's certainly exciting that the conversation is there, like the stage is set for this type of conversation. So this year we also saw a lot of really big fashion players get into wearables. So we're talking Michael Kors, Kate Spade. What do you make of this? Are big fashion brands finally banking on wearable tech, especially in the smart jewelry category?
I think they are. And it's very exciting. I agree with you completely. And it's kind of nice to see brands such as your Michael Kors and Kate Spade, because nearly everyone's got a Michael Kors or a Kate Spade product. I mean, so it's kind of nice that they're investing in fashion tech. I feel like those are the kind of brands that have zoomed out and looked at what fashion tech is doing and where it's headed. A lot of people have got a habit of looking at what we're producing now, which some of it isn't that great, but you need to look at what we're going to do tomorrow rather than what we're doing now. So when you see brands like Michael Kors and Kate Spade implementing technology into their brand strategy, I think it's great. They're investing where we're going and where we're headed. And that's amazing to see, because it will go past what they've taken out with smartwatches and whatnot. They can maybe come up with a bag that's got a lot more features than what we're capable at the moment. So I hope to see other brands taking that leap, getting into, especially high street brands.
And I think we will. I think Michael Kors was certainly, as you were mentioning, a trendsetter and saw an opportunity to really stake a claim in this space for the customer who doesn't want your Apple Watch. Really, they want the aesthetic, they want the refinement of a Michael Kors watch, but they want the smart features. And I think that the way that they were able to tell the story behind it as well in some of the Michael Kors advertising was really genius.
Advertising was strong.
Yeah, it was really great. And, you know, certainly made me want one.
Yes, right. Yeah, I did. I mean, I must admit the features weren't as strong as other smartwatches in terms of what it offers. What I did like about it, I loved the way it looked. I could see myself wearing it.
Yeah.
But in terms of the tech, I was a bit like, it hasn't got everything. So I felt a bit like I was sacrificing the technology slightly just to have a very good looking watch.
Well, you'll just have to call up Mr. Kors and give him your feedback, and version 2.0 will
we'll have. You can do a little collaboration with you and I, and you can kind of like lead him in the direction of what the coolest fashion tech smartwatch wearable is and whatnot. But I'm just glad that he's dabbling. You got to be thankful for that at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's so many brands that are trying to reinvent themselves right now. And they're kind of all taking a stab at different technology. Like, you know, we even saw Tommy Hilfiger experiment with VR in store this year. And there's so many companies trying to figure out what's going to work for them. And I think the important thing is that they're trying. And it's very different than the fashion industry is used to working. Everything is very behind the scenes and unveiled and, you know, theatrical. And to a certain extent, a lot of these brands are, you know, being very vulnerable in their experiments. And I think it's actually a good thing for the industry.
I think so too. I think with the much more established brands, because fashion doesn't like change. You think it would.
Yeah.
The amount of times it changes, you know, it's trends in every season and whatnot. But it's not a big adopter of change. So when you see people trying, like the older brands, like your Chanel's and whatnot, trying to kind of implement some sort of technology, you've got to appreciate the small things because they can only lead to bigger.
Yeah.
So I love that, the fact that Michael Kors and
the Fossil collaboration.
Michael Kors and Kate Spade are trying to kind of come into this market and give it a go.
Yeah.
It's great. I think it's amazing. And I'm hoping that they will be the ones that are leading the way for other brands. And like I said, like high street brands, like the Topshops and the H&Ms and the Zara, I'm looking forward to they dabbling into fashion tech as well.
Absolutely. So Meech and I think what we'll do is we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Fantastic.
Hey listeners, you're hearing a very special episode of the Electric Runway podcast, my 2016 Fashion Tech Roundup with Meech and Kapfunde of Fash Nerd. This is the very last installment of 2016. In the new year, we promise you'll be inspired by amazing designers, entrepreneurs, and companies working at the intersection of fashion and technology. Tune in 2017 to hear from the folks at the Alel's Design Studio, a Victoria-based company using 3D printing and laser cutting to transform the way we think about prosthetics. You'll also get the chance to learn more about a company called Everything, pioneering IoT solutions with Avery Dennison. Their collaboration promises to digitize 10 billion items of clothing and footwear in the next few years. You'll also meet Rana Nakal Solset of Emile and Aris, a company offering luxury heated apparel. She believes you don't have to sacrifice fashion for function. You'll hear about an app transforming the way models book and collect payment for gigs, as well as a new artificial intelligence chatbot for small to medium-sized retailers looking for affordable support for their online marketing efforts. That's all coming up in the new year of the Electric Runway podcast. We invite you to come along for the ride as we explore the future of fashion tech. And now back to our 2016 recap episode with the founding editor of Fash Nerd. So we're back and we're talking with Mucinetta Kapfunde of Fash Nerd. I'm so excited. We're jamming out and nerding out on all the fashion tech ideas that 2016 saw. So Mucinetta, 2016 saw a lot of ideas move from concept to consumer product. And I think this was a really important move for this industry. The example that stands out in my mind is obviously Nike's HyperAdapt self-lacing sneakers.
Oh, yes.
What are your thoughts on these? Does this mean fashion tech is going mainstream?
I think it is, and it's great. I think it's amazing. I mean, people of my generation remember the self-lacing sneakers from Back to the Future. So it feels like what we deemed impossible once has now become possible. It's great because it shows the progression of technology and how fast it's progressing as well. So I love it. I love that it's going mainstream. I can't wait for it to become so mainstream that it becomes the norm. That's the kind of ideal when it comes to fashion technology. We want it to become the norm so it's no longer something that's, ooh, it's a bit different, but this, it just is. We all just have self-lacing sneakers, you know.
Yeah, how fun. What a fun product.
I think it's exciting. I think it's fun for the boys and for the girls.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm now waiting for a high heel that doesn't hurt my feet, you know, if that's possible, I'm sure. And I know loads of people are working on smart heels at the moment, but I'm waiting for one to actually come to market that I can actually wear that isn't ugly and is very beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the reason that the HyperAdapt sneakers were so interesting to me was that we're seeing so many science fiction and, you know, novels and movies from the past really color and animate the fashion tech that's coming to market. And I think that there is this really interesting correlation between fiction and technology and what eventually becomes true. And, you know, a lot of designers are being inspired from these sci-fi dreams of the past. And so, you know, it's been really surreal to see the products that come to market that were maybe mentioned in a novel earlier. And yeah, HyperDapp was definitely like a moment for that. It's like, you know, the science fiction dreams have come true.
But you know what I think is quite funny though, Amanda? It's like, for us, it's like, wow, amazing. We remember seeing Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. But when you think of the younger generation, you know, the ones who are maybe about 15 at this moment in time, that would be the norm for them, because they're not going to remember the Back to the Futures and the hoverboard and all these things that get us all excited about, you know, technology meeting film. To them, it's going to be normal.
Yeah.
Our place in speeches is like, we'll be like, oh my God, look how amazing this is. Like, what do you mean? What else did you have before that?
Yeah.
So, it's going to be like how the iPad is for us. Like, I'm like excited. Mum's very excited about an iPad. And people are like, well, it's normal. What do you mean? You get so excited about what an iPad could do. Of course it can do this. So, you know, it's going to be that kind of moment where the young people are going to be, it's going to be normal for them to have soft lacing sneakers. But for us, it's this momentum, like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see that moment where people are seeing it as the norm. And I'm the one that's excited about it, because I remember the days when we didn't have it.
Absolutely. And I think that that's the really cool thing for both of our brands that, you know, we're building and continue to build into the new year is this idea of we're allowed to bring our own curiosity and enchantment for this space for others. And, you know, that to me is what keeps me going. That's the most rewarding thing. I remember curating my first fashion tech runway show here in Toronto, and there were a couple girls from my neighborhood that their mom brought them out to see the show to, you know, to support me and see what we were talking about when we were talking about fashion tech. And I remember, because I was on stage emceeing, just seeing their faces when they saw some of these, you know, light up garments and, you know, things that were moving by themselves, and they had never seen anything like this. And that enchantment, I think, is so cool. That's something that, you know, I really try to make alive in the Electric Runway brand.
That's what's great about our jobs as kind of publishers and educators, is that we get to see people's reaction to the great innovation taking place at the moment.
Yeah. You
know? And I think that is quite rewarding to be able to say, this is what's out there, and people go, wow.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
You kind of get off their buzz as well a little, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about Fashion Tech Berlin briefly, but let's just touch on it again. That's where you and I finally met in person, despite, you know, following each other for so long. We got to meet IRL.
So face to the name and be able to have, you know, I think we're both quite nervous actually when we met, weren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it was kind of like, nice to meet you. Oh my God, I'm going to go on. So, you know, it definitely was nice to meet you there and be able to meet also Nina as well, and talk about technology with you guys and what's going on in the space and so forth. So, you know, Fashion Tech Berlin was not only just a great opportunity for me to share what I know about fashion tech with the audience and those around me, it was actually quite nice to meet people like yourself, like influencers who have been doing this for ages, you know, and bounce ideas off you and see what your opinion is of different things that are taking place.
Yeah. And what did you think about the scene there in Berlin? I mean, Lisa Lang has done such a good job at rallying the troops. I mean, really, she's, in my mind, one of the people at the forefront in terms of moving things from concept to consumer product. I think she's doing a great job there.
She's doing an amazing job for sure. I mean, I met Lisa Lang back in 2015 at Republika in Berlin, that I was covering for Fashioner, and we had a lot of chat over lunch, and she was so amazing and so upfront and unafraid to tell me what she thinks and where she thinks things are going. And I like a person like that. It's quite refreshing, that kind of German, kind of unapologetic, kind of being upfront without, you know, being a reason or rhyme or anything. So I really enjoy talking to her. She's very refreshing. She didn't seem robotic in her responses, and I was able to really get so much enough information for me to write a really good article on her. So when I met her at Fashion Tech Berlin, she's come such a long way from when I met her in Republika a year before, that it was really nice to see. It really was. And she seems to be the name on everyone's lips at the moment. I'm really happy that she is pushing forward her ideas and what she wanted to do a year ago, she's actually done, which is amazing. Absolutely amazing and inspiring.
Yeah, and in addition to moving her own product on, you know, ASOS and getting her name out there with Electric Couture, she's also showing young designers, okay, this is how you bring something to market in a real way so that it doesn't just stay in the realm of like a concept piece. And I think that that's really pushed the whole ecosystem in Berlin forward.
It definitely has. That's the hardest part, bringing it to market. And if you've got somebody who can show you the way, then makes your job that little bit easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we were both in Stockholm before Fashion Tech Berlin, and we both spoke with Fredrik Timor of New Labs, and this is a company working on a plug-and-play solution for fashion designers who want to integrate tech. So their product is called Automat. We also, at the same time, a couple weeks later, both met Anina Nett, who you mentioned, of 360 Fashion Network, who's also working on fashion tech kits. So people who don't come from a coding or programming background can put together something like a robotic dress. How do you see fashion tech kits in light of this research that you've done in this space now? How do you see fashion tech kits and plug-and-play solutions fitting into the larger ecosystem?
I think it's a great idea because a lot of people within the industry in terms of fashion, their biggest complaint is that we don't code. We don't really know how to work with technology and so how we're going to implement it. So to be able to eliminate that as a problem is such a great kind of solution to offer brands and to offer labels. So I love what Automat is doing. You know, they're basically creating a situation that means that we can connect our product to the internet quite easily. And this is something that we never imagined you could do without having to go to university and do some serious studying or kind of tempt a technology company to work with you. So it kind of eliminates the middleman a little bit,
yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, I thought that was great as well. And when I was speaking with Fredrik, I was trying to get a sense of how he envisioned retailers adopting this technology. And one of the things that he said to me that was really interesting was, you know, he says, I don't think it's interesting to suppose what people are going to do with it. I think it's much more interesting to enable the technology and then just sit back and see what people do with it. And I thought that was a really smart answer, but I was just, you know, chomping at the bit to get a concrete example of, you know, something that could be integrated into an H&M or a Zara and really help bring fashion tech to the masses in the way that you and I are kind of imagining. So it'll definitely be interesting to follow that company and see what developments they're working on in the new year as well.
I think so for sure. But the good thing that is the 360 Fashion and NeuroLabs are doing is that they are introducing something that we can work on and we can work with. So this is just the beginning. It might not be great yet or might not do everything that we want it to do, but it's giving us a start. So if it's doing what it's doing now, can you imagine 12 months from now what it will be capable of doing?
Yeah.
So it's a work in progress for both of them, I'm sure. So I'm looking forward to seeing their progression with their product 12 months from now.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely building a strong foundation. I totally agree with you.
Exactly, exactly. And Anina is one of the earliest pioneers when it comes to fashion tech. She's been around for ages. And, you know, she knows what she's doing. And I'm really excited that she's bought this product. And I want to see what she's going to do with it and who is going to benefit from using her fashion tech kit.
She seems to me like one of those people that's just going to hit the nail on the head with something and it's going to skyrocket. I think she has the right ingredients in her background and she's just going to come out with something that's just going to be earth-shattering for the fashion industry. And I'm really excited to watch her do that.
She is such a buzzy, buzzy woman. I loved her. I mean, her excitement and enthusiasm is definitely catching.
Yeah.
You know, I found myself getting excited. Like, oh my God, what else can you do? You know? So that's what we need. We need someone like her who is excited about the product, excited about the space, you know, who is part of the merge, who understands where we're headed and can see beyond our limitations at the moment, you know, can see what we can achieve in the future rather than concentrating on what we have that isn't really working at this moment in time. So I'm really impressed with her and what her body of work, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she brings to the forefront.
Absolutely. So I want to switch gears a little bit from Fashion Tech Berlin and some of the companies that we talked with this summer towards talking about fashion weeks in general and some of the tech that we saw on the runway this year. So of course, Intel was a technology partner at New York Fashion Week. In Paris, we saw robots on the runway at the Chanel show, as well as Hussein Chalayan playing with wearables and projection mapping with Intel in Paris. What did you think of all of these experiments?
I think it was amazing. I think it was great. It's good to see brands embracing the technology that is put in front of them and implementing that into their designs. The only thing I hope for is that it's something that is, it's a beginning of something rather than like a one-off.
Rather than like a gimmick.
Yes. That's my fear a little bit, because they know using technology gives them the column inches. Is what kind of makes you think, oh, takes off the buzz off the excitement slightly. But I think quite a few of the brands that do embed technology are actually curious and they want to be able to investigate this exciting new world and see how they can implement that into their own brand strategy and go forward. Because I think the ones that don't do it are the ones that are going to be left behind in a couple of years, because that's the kind of direction we are headed in.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a part of that conversation, you know, 2016 heard a lot about see now, buy now. It's, you know, become a big part of the fashion conversation, as I'm sure it will continue to be in 2017. Do you think that this has any relationship to do with the rise of digital technology and social media? How are you thinking about see now, buy now? Do you consider it like a part of your wheelhouse at Fashion Nerd?
Yes, we do write about it, but that comes under the umbrella of retail tech, which is an area that has grown phenomenally. You know, it's achieved so much in making consumer-friendly shopping experiences, whether they be online or they be in store, which is great. And when it comes to social media and the role it plays, we've seen now by now, Instagram is a very big influencer. People want to see what they buy on Instagram. It's all about being visual and seeing a product and wanting to buy it. So this is an area that was going to always happen. You know, accessibility for consumers is something that retailers focus on because it helps their bottom line. And also, it kind of caters to what we want now. When you see brands like Henry Holland, who did the See Now, Buy Now on the runway, it's great. It makes it accessible to everybody. There's no kind of exclusivity. If you want something, you can get it no matter what where your station is in life.
Yeah.
But the only problem I find with See Now, Buy Now is sustainability. Rears its head. Do we need more clothes? You know, it brings up that question of people have so much, such easy access to buying things. What does that mean in terms of sustainability and buying things that we don't need? So I kind of weigh both ends. I passionately look at the positives in terms of retail tech and what, you know, how brands benefit from it. But we also look at it from the other angle, which is fast fashion and how that plays a part with that option, really.
Yeah, and it's interesting you brought that up, because fast fashion and sustainability are part of the fashion tech conversation, certainly, because technology obviously is an industry that's known for innovation. There really is the potential here to innovate our way out of an industry that's really bottomed out. The fashion industry just can't continue any longer the way it has been. So there's a big opportunity here, and I understand what you're saying. The way I think about see now, buy now is because designers are going to have to be producing collections available right after they show on the runway, perhaps they'll scale back a little bit and just, you know, do fewer pieces. But maybe that's just me being idealistic. I'm not sure.
I mean, I think that is, it's kind of like what you'd say looks good on paper, but in reality, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know, the see now buy option is great for consumers in terms of they have quick access to something they want. We have become a population of people that want what we want and we want it now.
Yeah.
You know, gone are the days where you can order something and have it made in 3 weeks and then get it delivered.
Right.
You know, if you tell us 2 days, we're like, we don't want to buy it. We want it now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, they're kind of catering to our demands in a kind of roundabout way. You know, they're catering to what the consumer wants. But I think we need to also look at the disadvantage of that, which, like I said, is all about the fast fashion, the sustainability. How, you know, are these pieces that people are going to own for the rest of their lives? Or are they throwaway pieces? we need to kind of look at that as well and make sure that we are not pushing forward something that is damaging our environment to the point where it's you can't repair it anymore.
Yeah. It's almost as if just when you thought fashion couldn't get any faster, it did. And what does that mean, you know?
Yeah. Fast food, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's accessible, which is a great thing. But to what extent?
Yeah.
What we need to think about. You know, when can we put a stop to it? When is it like, okay, enough? I love it, you know, but I'm not sure about people having so easy access to things they don't necessarily need.
Yeah. Where do you see that sustainability conversation going? Because I'm noticing there's a lot of trading websites like Poshmark and Letgo. And here in Toronto, we have a startup called Buns Trading Zone, which quickly went from 4,000 to 30,000 users in a month. And it's for trading your old whatever for other things. And so you build a profile and this and that. But I'm noticing that it's a lot of clothes. And there's a very big market for women who are looking to find a second life for their closets. So I'm very interested in that side of the conversation as well. You know, yes, fashion is getting faster, but we also have the tools and resources to bring in a kind of longevity to our clothes, hopefully. I don't know. I'm always looking for silver linings, so.
I like your way of thinking. No, I think that's a very positive way of looking at things. But, I mean, I was part of a panel recently where I was speaking with Olivia, who created the Fashion Debates. And we were talking about how fashion could save the planet and sustainability. And it brought up the question of how the fashion and sustainability can run side by side. And I think a lot of the power is with the consumer. The consumer can demand what they want brands to do in order. Brands will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, they're the customer and they're the ones parting with their money.
Yep.
And so when it comes to that, if a consumer says, listen, I will not buy a t-shirt made this way and I want more transparency, we can demand that. We have the power to do so. So in order to push sustainability forward, consumers need to realize the power that they have.
Do you think tech can enable that?
Of course, yes. Technology can play a very strong role with sustainability. A good example is when you think about Drupal Fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
They've created a fabric that, which I'm sure you know about, where liquid can roll off it. It's stain resistant.
Yeah.
And their whole entire concept is based around saving energy and water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, what's the other brand? The one that's makes plastic out of plastic.
Oh, I'm not sure about that one. I know that there's a couple companies in San Francisco trying to spin future fabrics with unusual materials like, you know, spider silk and 3D printed fabrics and things like that.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're using like plastic found in the ocean. You know how harmful that is.
Yeah.
They're kind of spinning it into denim to create jeans. So we're kind of wearing our own waste. But you don't know that you are. It doesn't feel any different. It doesn't feel, you know, so different that you're aware of it. Bionic Yarn, that's it. Bionic Yarn. So they work with G-Star Raw, and they are creating jeans spinned with like plastic from the ocean. And I think that's great. You know, it's a good way of getting rid of some of our kind of growing problem of too much plastic. And that is very hard to kind of not biodegradable. You cannot get rid of it.
Yeah.
So if we can do it via that way, why not?
Absolutely. Okay, so I just have a couple more questions for you because I want to be cognizant of your time. I want to talk about smart glasses because it seems like they're making a comeback. Are you hoping for a pair? What do you think?
I think they're great. I'm not quite sure about snap spectacles. A great idea. Love it. But I'm more kind of tempted with View smart glasses.
Wasn't that a cool company? Oh my gosh. They
loved
just
it.
Came out of.
I love, because I wear glasses.
Yeah.
So I don't wear them all the time, but I'm short-sighted, so I wear them on occasion. And I love the idea of like glasses with invisible technology in them, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely.
For me, I think they're more for my age group, the View smart glasses versus the snap spectacles. But what's great about the snap spectacles is that they learned lessons from the mistakes that the Google glasses made.
Absolutely, yeah. They're fun, approachable. I mean, you bought them.
Would you want a pair?
I would, just for the sake of trying them, but I'm not a huge Snapchat user. I use the stories feature on Instagram to share bits of my day the way that I used to on Snapchat. But I love the idea of, you know, perhaps being on a runway and sitting and enjoying the show with your hands folded, but still being able to record and share out later. And I think that the spectacles could empower that. But I have to agree with you, the View smart glasses, it's kind of like there's so much more than glasses. They're almost like a personal assistant that you wear on your face. And, you know, the promises of that company are amazing. And, you know, they were so overfunded on their campaign. And I really hope that they're able to bring this to market in the same way that they advertised, because I think that they're going to do really well.
Yeah, they're onto something. And do you know what's great about it, Amanda? They've got the basics, the calorie counter, the distance, the notifications.
Yeah.
You know, those are the basics now these days.
Yeah.
For wearables and so forth. They don't have those. It's like you're going wrong somewhere.
Yeah.
And they do, you know, they track your steps, they track your calories and your distance and.
What I really want to experience with them is the way that they speak to you through bone conduction. So the idea that your personal assistant could be reminding you of something without anyone else hearing, sort of thing, because it's a very intimate wearable that perhaps people wouldn't even know that you're wearing. So I can imagine wearing those at a party, because I'm really terrible with names. So I can imagine wearing them at a party and having the glasses have some sort of facial recognition technology where they're, you know, scrolling my LinkedIn or Facebook and reminding me like, oh, that's this person. And, you know,
you're Andrea from Devil Wears Prada.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll call my glasses Andrea.
Yeah, and who is that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I just want to talk about a couple more things here. So 2017 promises to be a huge year for VR. How do you think the fashion world is going to continue to adopt and experiment with virtual reality?
I mean, recently at London Fashion Week, we went to Martina Yalgard's show. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you went. Basically, it was, we experienced her collection through HoloLens. So you put them on and you see the model wearing collection.
Oh, fun.
7 or 8 pieces. It was an amazing way of like viewing it. I mean, I was like, wow, if this is the future, then sign me up. it was so different from catwalk and runways. You know, you have a mom in front of you and she's showing you the collection. I mean, amazing. But what was disappointing was the quality.
Mm.
But if I was to step away from that, you know, because obviously it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
So if I was to step away from that being a disadvantage and just look at what it can achieve, it was amazing. Great way for designers to connect to the consumers.
When you say quality, you mean the kind of quality of the graphics?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. The model was something like a Sims from 19.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't the best of, you know, it wasn't like spot on.
Yeah.
In terms of the quality of what you saw through the HoloLens.
But yeah.
It helped you envision what the future and what is possible and where we are headed.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to play a really big role in the change of retail tech.
I think so too. I think that virtual reality has been used since the very beginning by the fashion community as a tool for designers to connect directly with consumers. And I think that's going to continue. I think that VR is going to become interactive, which it already is. So you can click on a dress and view more details about it, but then shoppable as well. And I'm really excited for, you know, digital spaces that we enter and go shopping and, you know, can try on our clothing in VR without having to ever actually step in a change room and getting like, you know, your sizing information. I just think that that's still for me a really clumsy process. Don't get me wrong. I love shopping when I'm in the mood for it. When I'm not in the mood for it, it's a pain, you know?
I understand. Especially for the rush and God, yeah, stuff in the Black Friday that we did. I completely forgot it was this weekend and I went out and you know, wasn't that great. So it's kind of like, why did I do this?
Yeah.
But yeah, I can understand that. Sometimes you don't feel like it. And if technology can make it an easier, more enjoyable experience, and you feel like you're still trying on your dresses and your shoes and whatnot, and you don't have to leave your house, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, and but also in the area... Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine.
I was just going to say, also in the area of personal styling, like I'm still waiting for the computer from Clueless that she has in the beginning of the movie that tells you what goes together and what doesn't.
I love that. I think I've got quite a good idea what works, but sometimes you just don't know. You can step out the house wearing something you think, what was I thinking? You know?
Yeah.
It'd be good to get that taken away from me. And then they just hand me my clothes in the morning.
Exactly. So looking forward.
What I was going to add.
Yeah.
Beauty technology. I think, you know, with augmented reality.
Oh, yeah.
Virtual reality slightly. Is also an area that is growing and becoming quite innovative. And I'm really excited to see where beauty tech is headed as well.
Yeah,
it's not spoken about very much because a lot of people focus a lot on fashion tech.
Yeah.
But I've been kind of dabbling in beauty tech and looking around to see what's going on and, you know, how technology is playing a role within the beauty industry. And I am curious to see in 2017 what's going to develop and how they're going to use that with consumers.
Yeah, especially when it comes to this like magic mirror concept, everyone's thinking about how they can make physical retail touch points more like digital ones where they're interactive. And this magic mirror concept, I think, is very real and very within reach for a lot of beauty retailers. And they're already experimenting with it in like the Westfield Mall in London. And I know there's a Toronto-based company called Modiface that's working in augmented reality for beauty brands that you can actually try on different lipsticks from Sephora. And it's a really cool space. I totally agree with you.
I love it. I think it's exciting. And I'm not a big makeup wearer, but I can appreciate where they're headed.
I'm not either, but every time I go into Sephora, I manage to spend money on something.
Most of the Sephora's here in London as well. So I'm kind of like, the newest Sephora is Paris.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yes, they were closing like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, a while ago now. And whenever I need to get Sephora, do you know you walk in and that perfume slaps you across the face?
Yeah. Yeah.
Straight away, you know you're in Sephora. I love Sephora and I'd love to see what they're doing, but unfortunately, we just don't have Sephora anymore.
Why is that?
Did they hear that, what you're saying about how, you know, innovative they're being as a brand and kind of investing in technology a little bit?
Well, did they get kicked out or did they get taken over by something? How come Sephora left?
No clue. We just saw they were disappearing. They start closing one by one by one by one, and then suddenly they were all gone. There was no explanation, no nothing. It was kind of like the end of a relationship, you know, when that one guy never tells you anything except, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
What happened?
Yeah.
It was kind of like that with Sephora. It felt a bit like, what happened? Because you were here 1 minute and now you're gone.
Yeah.
I do like Sephora. And whenever I'm in Paris, I just OD on it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So, Mucinetta, what events are in your calendar for 2017? What are you looking forward to?
Well, you know, it's always the usual suspects, like Fashion Week, Republica, Stess. But I am looking forward to the Telecom Fashion Fusion Awards taking place in Berlin in January.
Yeah. And
I know there's a lot of awards shows going on at the moment, people doing their own awards. So I really want to know who they've got their eyes on and who the winners are. So, yeah, so that's taking place on the 18th of January in Berlin. So it's another reason to visit Germany. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the usual, like your decoded, and I like to go to Fashion Week. I always go with my fingers crossed that something big was going to happen. But what about you? You went to Russian Fashion Week. I mean, how was that? And are you going to go in 2017?
Yeah, we're actually putting out our video shortly, so it'll come out just in a couple days. It'll probably have already aired by the time this podcast episode goes out, but we're putting out a video on it. It was really cool. They're really vying for a leadership role in Russia when it comes to fashion technology, and they're realizing that they can't do it themselves. So they really understand the importance of having an international perspective, bringing in experts from elsewhere in the world. And they really do understand that fashion is an industry that needs to be reinvented, and they're keen to reinvent it. So it was really, really cool. And Russia was just, Moscow was just beautiful. I mean, I really didn't know what to expect. I was a little bit scared going into it, but it was wonderful. It was a great experience.
You must admit, you looked really fashionably dressed.
Well, the first thing I did when I got there was I went and I bought a fur hat, like the kind of classic Russian fur hat, because number one, it's such a good price there with the exchange rate. And, you know, number two, I had to do as the locals do. So
I'm a big hat person. So I was kind of loving your outfit. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it. I was kind of kicking myself.
Next time.
I was like, I'll try coming next time.
Yeah.
Next 2017.
Yeah. And I think in the spring of 2017, they're going to have something else. So for me, you know, I hope to go to Russia again. I hope to make it to New York Fashion Week, CES, you know, in early 2017, as well as South By. I mean, there's a number of events on my radar. It's just really being smart about my time and, you know, where it makes sense. But I could just, you know, travel 24 hours a day. And sometimes it feels like I do, but there's so much ground to cover in this space. So it's great that there's at least, you know, two of us and others out there.
But you know what's great, Amanda? The events have become much better, don't you think?
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
There's much more out there than there was 2 years ago.
Well, it's almost like fashion tech was that awkward teenager that didn't really know how to dress. And now she's really become a lady and knows how to put herself together. That's true.
That's a really good description of it. It is. The awkward teenage kind of years have passed now in a... The ugly duckling has become the swan.
I think so.
I hope to go to a lot more, not only just the big events, but also the small ones as well. You can really get into a great conversation when you go to meetups as well. I'd like to make some time to attend those.
Yeah.
Besides the usual Fashion Week and Fashion Tech Berlin and Republica and so forth. But I want to be able to see a lot of what's going on. I want to keep my eyes open and keep the conversation going and make sure that people that read Fashion Nerd get what's hot, what's happening 2017 before it hits, you know, it hits the press, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what do you think fashion can learn from technology?
Well, I think fashion can learn from technology is how to think outside the box, mm-hmm. you know, and how to create something that a consumer wants. Fashion's very good at selling what we don't need, you know? It is. It's a complete master at it. So it'd be really, what we'll learn from technology is be able to put together something that we actually do need and want. And I think that's great. That'll be great. And that's what makes them a great partnership, is that they can learn from each other in that respect.
Yeah. And so what do you think tech can learn from fashion?
How to be stylish.
Exactly.
sentence.
Yeah.
How to be stylish. That's been technology's problem, is how they can create something that consumers want in terms of wearables and fashion tech, not so much in terms of technology itself.
Right.
So they learn from fashion, and they are learning from fashion, how to create a product that is a mainstream crowd pleaser.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's a lot of people out there trying to keep on top of this beat, but there's so much happening. How do you stay on top of trends and find emerging stories?
I keep my ears and my kind of my eyes open to possibilities. We get, the good thing about Fashion Nerd, and I'm so grateful and so humble, is that people get in touch with us quite a lot and tell us their story. And I love that, because I'm able to now kind of take their story and tell everybody else, because we're all about being the kind of the publisher that, you know, that starts that conversation. So we're always open to people's ideas, people's stories, and there's so many ideas and stories out there. And another thing that we do as well, just keep our eyes open, you know, and our ears to the ground, see what's going on in the industry. And I think the day that you become closed-minded to what's going on, to other people's ideas, is the day that kind of you kind of become a little stale, you know. It's all about knowing what's happening by listening and not talking too much. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of ideas out there, and one needs to be able to listen to them and then translate that to their audience.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really good advice. So, Amichanetta, how can people stay in touch with you and follow what you're doing at Fashion Nerd?
We're complete Twitter people, so you can follow us at Fashion Nerd or at Fashion Nerd Editor. You can follow me. Or you can subscribe to Fashion Nerd Bites, and we will send you all the news straight to your email box.
I just signed up. I wasn't aware that you had an email newsletter. So how often does that go out?
What we're trying to do with the newsletter is create kind of newsletter that you can select what you want to hear. There's nothing more annoying than a newsletter that has information that is of no interest to you.
Right.
So we are tailor-making our newsletter, which should be, first issue should go out in 2017 at the beginning of the year. And we will be giving people like yourself the opportunity to say, this is what I'm interested in hearing about, whether it be sustainability, collaborations, lifestyle tech, fashion tech, interviews, you know, what videos are hot at the moment, what podcasts. to listen to. You know, you just tick what boxes you want, what news you want to hear, and then whenever you do get the newsletter, which will be every month, it will be catered to what you prefer to be educated on.
Very good. And so we'll put the links up on Electric Runway so that people can take a look. Thank you so much for your time today and for jamming out with me on fashion technology. I'm really appreciative, and I'm sure all of our listeners are as well. So many great insights from your end and such a great back and forth. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Amanda. It's been great. Thank you.
And I'll see you in 2017.
Most definitely. See you soon.
That was my conversation with Mucinetta Capfunde, founding editor of Fashnerd. For images of everything we talked about on the show, check out electricrunway.com. For all past and future episodes of the Electric Runway podcast, tune into our website or on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher. For daily fashion tech freshness, we invite you to follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We're at electric_runway. So that's it for us for 2016. You'll hear from me, Amanda Costco, in the new year. We'll be back in January with more conversations with the makers and shakers of fashion tech. We've got some amazing interviews lined up for 2017. We'll be talking connected clothing, luxury heated apparel, and even artificial intelligence for retail. That's all coming up in the new year on the Electric Runway podcast. Have a very happy holiday season, and until next time, here's looking towards the future. Music from today's episode by Jeff Kale.